Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Three days and about 14 hours until the debt ceiling deadline. Good morning, everyone. We now have a debt ceiling countdown clock on our politics website, itsafreecountry.org. But this is a public radio countdown clock, so it's not just the ticking of the time bomb in big red numbers. We've got explainers about the debt ceiling and how it works, commentary from left, right, and other, and Anna Sale's new history piece about past speakers of the House and their moments of truth. John Boehner, check it out, and do check out that debt ceiling countdown clock at itsafreecountry.org. And later this hour, we'll get the latest from Capitol Hill and ask why students and farmers seem set to be big losers in this game, no matter how it ends. That's coming up. But first, right into the teeth of this high-drama political conflict that seems made for cable news channels, there is change and controversy at all three big ones, CNN, MSNBC, and Fox. Al Sharpton seems to be taking over the 6 p.m. slot on MSNBC, a step for primetime diversity, but it's controversial among some people of all races. Piers Morgan, who replaced Larry King on CNN this year, is now being haunted by his past as editor of, you guessed it, a Murdoch tabloid. And Fox, well, it's got its own Murdoch problem, obviously, but also an ACLU lawsuit seeking records of a meeting between Fox News Channel President Roger Ailes and Governor Chris Christie. The question is, if a news organization chief urges a partisan candidate to run for president, is he still running a news organization, or is it something else? With us to talk about all this cable news, the cable news trifecta, are Brian Stettler, New York Times media writer, and Ellis Coase, Newsweek columnist and an observer both of media and of race in America. His latest book is The End of Anger, A New Generation's Take on Race and Rage. Hi, Brian. Hi, Ellis. Welcome back to WNYC.
It's a pleasure to be here.
Thanks.
And let's take these one at a time, and let's start with Al Sharpton reportedly getting the 6 p.m. slot on MSNBC. He's replacing one host who's in that slot temporarily or has been there for I guess in a permanent hire, but for a short time. But in a way, you might say he's replacing Keith Olbermann as the opinion host most likely to draw a crowd other than Rachel Maddow. So here's a recent sample as Sharpton filled in on another MSNBC show. This is Sharpton talking about black Republican presidential hopeful Herman Cain.
Mr. Cain's ideas are not good for America. This week, Mr. Cain said he doesn't think minimum wage is necessary. Mr. Cain, I'm proud to see you as a black become successful. I'm proud to see you lift yourself up. But I'm not proud to hear you say minimum wage is not necessary, to say President Obama grew up in Kenya when you know better and playing to the birthers, when you are trying to say that Muslims and others shouldn't be tolerated in your cabinet or that they should be screened. I don't like your policies. I'm as black as you. I'm not mocking you. I'm saying what you're saying is wrong.
A taste of Al Sharpton on MSNBC. Seems he's headed for the 6 p.m. show there Monday through Friday. Brian Stettler, New York Times media writer. Why Al Sharpton?
MSNBC's had a long history having Al Sharpton on as a guest, and they feel he's going to prop up their ratings all through prime time. You know, if you've got good ratings at 6, you're going to do better at 7, better at 8, better at 9. They've had some success in the last few weeks. But it's gotten a little bit of attention because this time last year, Al Sharpton was campaigning for Comcast to buy NBC. He was giving support to that deal. Of course, MSNBC is owned by NBC, now owned by Comcast. And it shows how strange these relationships can be in a world where cable news doesn't just have journalists. Now it has activists.
What?
You know, now it has pundits.
Why was Sharpton behind Comcast's bid to buy NBC, and why would that taint him if they hire him as a host?
I don't know if it necessarily taints him, but it shows how complicated the relationships get. You know, back in the days where there were only journalists on cable news, you know, this was probably 10, 15 years ago, with the exception of Crossfire on CNN, we didn't have these sorts of these issues in the past. You know, you would never have somebody who was a former lobbyist or a former politician on cable. But now you do, because cable has become so opinionated. And it's just another example of that trend, I think.
And anybody who knows New York talk radio knows that Al Sharpton has had his own radio talk show for decades in New York. So he certainly got experience in the talk show biz, as well as appearing on camera as a guest. Ellis Coase, your book is The End of Anger, A New Generation's Take on Race and Rage. Al Sharpton, in a way, personified the previous generation's take on race and rage, no justice, no peace. How do you see him in the context of your book as a rare African-American hire for one of these prime evening cable shows?
I mean, and actually, Al is in the book. I mean, I interviewed him for the book. I mean, but I think the fact is, we've come a long way from the day when cable TV was populated mostly by news people. And certainly as a journalist, I'm not happy to see this trend where we have these people who are hired primarily because they are provocative personalities as opposed to because they have any serious news credentials. But the fact of the matter is, most of the hosts on these cable shows no longer fit my description of what a journalist is. I mean, Keith Olbermann was a journalist, but he was a sports journalist, and that's not the role he played at in the show at MSNBC. I mean, Rachel Maddow is a very brilliant individual, and she has a PhD from Oxford, but she certainly isn't a journalist by most conventional standards. So we're looking at the evolution of cable TV, and certainly if you look at all the hosts at Fox and at some of the other cable stations, these are not people who are journalists, you know. And I think and there was an objection from black journalists that they were not black journalists on the broadcasting.
Right. Here's an NBC News product. So many black journalists out there in broadcast and otherwise, and I guess among the National Association of Black Journalist members, there was some grumbling, why does Al Sharpton get this perk? But I think the answer is what you say. These are advocacy slots, not journalist slots.
And he's certainly a provocative personality, and I think it may very well be that he can shore up their ratings. I guess that remains to be seen.
And by the way, contrary to some of the talk that's out there about him being the first African-American host on a primetime evening cable show, actually, Alan Keyes, the ultra-right wing African-American, he had a show, 10 p.m. slot on MSNBC for a while.
And Alan Keyes certainly was not a journalist. I mean, he was
a politician
and an economist and activist. So the very idea, the very notion that these are shows for journalists is almost laughable these days. It would be great, in my opinion, if they were. But these are political entertainment shows.
Mm-hmm. Ellis, I read that Sharpton has promised never to criticize President Obama on the show. Glenn Greenwald on Salon was writing about this, not criticize him about black unemployment or anything else because Obama, as a black man in office, already takes so much guff. Do you know if that's true? And if that's his position going in, is it sustainable?
Yeah, that was reported, I guess, originally in 60 Minutes. I have heard that. I have not asked him about it, and so I don't know whether he has explicitly made that pledge or not. He clearly has a long relationship with Obama, going back, I guess, to the original Democratic Convention at which Obama was introduced to the nation, and they've maintained the relationship since Obama has been in the White House. That I do know, and he certainly considers himself an ally of Obama. Whether he's made this sort of pledge, I just simply don't know. But if he has, yes, I mean, that's problematic because the fact of the matter is that a host should be free to criticize anybody. But then we go back to the point that I made earlier, which is that these are not news people.
Right.
These are not journalists. You know, I mean, if you want to talk about the people at Fox, very few of them criticize anything that Republicans do in any significant way.
But Brian Stetler, in a way, that's not true because, you know, the Fox hosts are about ideological purity on the left, the opinion hosts, as Rush Limbaugh is, et cetera, and they will criticize Republican politicians if they're not being pure enough on the right. Did I say on the left? They will criticize Republican politicians if they are not pure enough on the right. Limbaugh does that. Mark Levin does that. Hannity does that. Similarly, you do see Rachel Maddow and Ed Schultz and others criticizing Obama if they are not you know, consistent enough in their left positions. So if and you see even on PBS, which is supposed to be the much tamer network, Tavis Smiley is very known for being outspoken against President Obama on certain things. So if Al Sharpton is going to decline to do that at all, that would really be unique among these kinds of hosts.
It would be unique. It would be a unique hour on MSNBC, which is increasingly a place where you hear criticism of Obama from the left. It's become that. And actually, in reality, it's been that for a couple of years. And the person that was on at 6 o'clock before Al Sharpton, Cenk Uygur, he was especially harsh toward Obama sometimes. He told me last week that he would see the ratings sometimes tick down a little bit when he was especially harsh toward Obama.
But I haven't found that to be true for other hosts. It seems to me that the question is not whether or not they are critical of particular politicians. It seems to me the question is whether they are offering up anything that remotely resembles an unbiased take on the news. And again, I mean, the Fox folks, yes, you're absolutely right. They may criticize particular politicians, but they don't criticize right-wing orthodoxy.
Right. They are upholders of right-wing orthodoxy.
Yeah.
We're talking about three cable news channels making news themselves, CNN, MSNBC, Fox, with Brian Stetler, New York Times media writer, Ellis Coast, Newsweek columnist, and author of The End of Anger, A New Generation's Take on Race and Rage. And let's move on as our cable news channel trifecta continues on to CNN, where Piers Morgan is getting heat after replacing Larry King earlier this year. The problem? Morgan used to be editor of the now-shuttered and discredited Rupert Murdoch tabloid News of the World, late of the phone hacking scandal. Here is a soundbite from 2009 of Piers Morgan, kind of claiming some ownership of that, interviewed on the BBC by Kirsty Young.
And what about this nice middle-class boy who would have to be dealing with, I mean, essentially people who rake through bins for a living, people who tap people's phones, people who take secret photographs, who do all that very nasty down-in-the-gutter stuff.
Yeah,
how did you feel about that?
Well, to be honest, let's put that in perspective as well. Not a lot of that went on. A lot of it was done.
Really?
No, a lot of it was done by third parties rather than the staff themselves. Mm. That's not to defend it, because obviously you were running the results of their work. I'm quite happy to be parked in the corner of tabloid beast and to have to sit here defending all these things I used to get up to. And I make no pretense about the stuff we used to do. I simply say the net of people doing it was very wide and certainly encompassed the high and the low end of the supposed newspaper market.
Piers Morgan 2 years ago. So, Ellis Coast, does Piers Morgan have a News of the World phone hacking problem?
He has a problem in terms of credibility. I mean, he's been very careful, you know, since this statement came out to essentially say that he was not agreeing that he had hacked phones. And and up to this point, there's been no smoking gun that proves that he has. But the fact of the matter is, he is acknowledging that he was involved in journalistic dirty tricks, and he was actually fired from the Mirror having to do with a scandal involving fake photos. So yes, he has a problem with credibility. He may or may not have been involved in the hacking of phones. We just don't know that.
And he was News of the World editor way back in the mid-1990s. But reporters also dug up this from one of Morgan's books. This is talking about a phone message that he got more recently from a lover. And he writes, given that it was the Daily Mirror under my editorship, which exposed Sven's fling with Erlika Johnson after learning of a similar message left by the then England manager on her phone, I can only hope and pray the gutter press, ha-ha, aren't hacking into my mobile. So, Brian Stetler, how much of a smoking gun is that for Piers Morgan, having presided over things for which other editors have now lost their jobs?
It's a tricky situation for Piers Morgan because he knows the heat is on him, he knows attention is on him. But, you know, I don't see anything so far that's keeping anyone at CNN up at night. When they hired him, they knew about his past and they knew about the scandals he had been involved in, and they knew about the fake photos that led to his resignation, perhaps his forced resignation. They knew about all of that, and it does speak to the earlier point about how far cable news has come, that it's not as much news-oriented in prime time as it is is opinion-oriented, that CNN would stand by him and hire him after knowing about those claims in the past. Now, of course, there's no direct proof that he was involved in phone hacking. If there was to be direct proof, and there isn't any right now, maybe that would change. But right now, it's really telling that CNN has no issues, given that they hired him last year and knew all about his background.
I think we're fundamentally changed because he's gone on record saying that he hasn't, and if in fact it comes out that he has, and again, we don't know that he has, he would be guilty of lying.
And cable news trifecta part three, Fox News Channel. First, Brian, how is the whole British hacking scandal affecting Fox News Channel in this country? Does an Atlantic Ocean of padding protect it from taking too much of a hit?
I think that's exactly right, that this has been the story. The hacking scandal in Britain has been confined mostly to Britain. There are some ads running on cable channels attacking News Corporation. You know, there's some ancillary, little bits and pieces that might be hurting public perception of the News Corporation here in the U.S. But for the most part, it hasn't affected Fox News. And as one public interest group expert told me last week, you know, loyal viewers of Fox News are probably not the kind of viewers that are going to get concerned about media consolidation or media ownership. They're not the kind of viewers that might necessarily be bothered by the fact that News Corporation is a giant media conglomerate and that it owns many assets around the world. Those are the sorts of issues that are being exposed by the hacking scandal. You know, over in Britain, people are talking about whether Rupert Murdoch simply owns too much. But that's not an issue you're necessarily going to hear about on Fox News. And it's not necessarily an issue that a conservative, loyal base of Fox News is going to bring up.
But, Ellis, in the U.K., Murdoch is having to close newspapers and fire editors and do all kinds of other things. I don't know if we've heard the last of any possible phone hacking in this country. The FBI is looking into possible phone hacking on 9/11 victims and their families. Would it take something surfacing in the United States against Americans to make this more salient of an issue to Fox?
I think it would, and I think it's interesting that he took the prophylactic move of getting rid of Les Hinton, one of his key lieutenants, obviously, who was the publisher of the Wall Street Journal, because he was certainly in an indirect way, and perhaps much more than that, you know, connected to the phone hacking scandal in the UK.
The news about Fox this week is that the ACLU filed a lawsuit seeking records of a possible meal shared by Fox News Channel President Roger Ailes and Governor Chris Christie, allegedly urging Christie to run for president. The underlying ethical issue is, if a news organization chief urges a partisan candidate to run for president, is he still running a news organization, or is it something else? Just for context, because Roger Ailes is a name that most people who follow news and politics have heard of, but probably haven't heard his voice, here is some Roger Ailes, just so you can hear his voice, on a Hoover Institute website answering a question about Fox News Channel.
Somebody started on me about Fox News being conservative, and I said, are you comfortable with CNN and MSNBC? And he said, absolutely. And I said, what about NBC, ABC, and CBS? He said, fine. I said, PBS, NPR, no problem. I said, New York Times, Washington Post, LA Times. He said, great. I said, so, but this little cable channel called Fox is somehow ruining your life. I said, keep in mind, the last two guys to get all of them lined up together were Hitler and Stalin. That did not work out well for people. So if to be honest with you, if all the media tipped to the right, I'd be the biggest liberal in New York.
Or maybe not, but Roger Ailes, Fox News Channel president, there's a sample of him in his own words. And Brian Stelter, I think I've been calling you by a slightly wrong last name. Forgive me.
I kind of prefer the wrong one. That's okay.
So I'll keep using it. No, Brian Stelter, media reporter for The New York Times. First, in theory, if Ailes did dine with Christie to urge him to run, is that even a problem for his news organization, in your opinion?
It goes back to that loyal audience I was describing. Now, not all viewers of Fox News are conservative or Republican, but we know there's a bent toward that audience, especially in prime time with people like Bill O'Reilly and Sean Hannity. And those people may not be bothered at all by the idea of Roger Ailes giving advice to Chris Christie or recommending something to Chris Christie. By the way, Ailes has denied recommending that Christie run for president, but he has acknowledged the dinner. And, you know, Ailes is quite plugged into GOP circles like that. But the reason why that got my attention, that this ACLU lawsuit, is because back in 2001, right after the September 11th terrorist attacks, Roger Ailes sent a letter to George W. Bush with advice. And that got a lot of attention back then. That was rather scandalous at the time. And he came out and explained why he did it. We've come a long way since then, since 2001, and it's much more expected and understood that Fox News and MSNBC on the left play in these political circles. So I think it's interesting that it's getting less attention now, the idea of what Roger Ailes' relationships are with presidential candidates and Republican figures, than it did back in 2001.
Ellis, is the question that I framed too broad or too sharp? If a news organization chief urges a partisan candidate to run for president, is he still running a news organization, or is it something else? Certainly it would be inappropriate if the president of CBS News or the president of NBC News or the executive editor of the New York Times did something like that, or my boss. But because it's Fox, because of the context we were describing earlier about how these are advocacy organizations put on a lot of advocacy shows, you know, but they still claim to be a fair and balanced news organization. I mean, is there an existential question here?
Well, I think it goes back to where we began, in a sense, which is the question of what these entities are. I mean, we're seeing a clash of old news values and these evolving news values of these kinds of things. And it's clear that Ailes, for a long time throughout his career, really, but certainly now, is a player and a major player in Republican politics. And he's been accused of other questionable things. One of the more interesting ones, I guess, earlier this year, supposedly urging the publisher Judith Regan, you know, to lie in regarding her affair with then Police Commissioner Bernard Kerik. So it's not clear to me that Fox is, in any real sense of the word, a news network. It seems to be something else, and so the question becomes: how do we regard these people who head these institutions, which do reporting of some sort, and which certainly skirt around the news and deal with the news, but really don't report the news in a way that those of us who have been journalists most of our lives think of as news reporting?
Well, we're out of time, but that's our cable news trifecta.
Got through all three of them.
All three of them not only reporting the news, opining on the news, but making news this week. Brian Stelter, New York Times media reporter, and Ellis Coase, Newsweek columnist, an observer of both media and of race in America, among other things. His latest book is The End of Anger, A New Generation's Take on Race and Rage. Thank you both so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Coming up next, we will get the latest on the debt ceiling deadline, with the countdown clock ticking away at our politics website, itsafreecountry.org. In fact, President Obama is supposed to make a statement momentarily, and if he comes out in the next few minutes, we'll take it live. But we'll also see what else is going on with this deadline, 3.5 days away. And we'll look at some groups, like students seeking subsidized loans, who are almost certain to be losers no matter how this turns out. Stay tuned.